You know, this kind of community thing actually stems all the way back to high school if I really think about it. And the leadership associated with what I'm doing now really stems back to high school.
Oh yes, we go all the way back to high school in this podcast takeover episode. If you ever wondered where my mission of inclusivity and community over competition all stemmed from, this episode is for you. Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Today, photographer and podcast superfan Molly Rose is asking the questions, and I do a whole lot of talking as we celebrate our 3-year anniversary of Design Biz Survival Guide. We recap some highlights of my journey over the past few years, and we dig into some of today's biggest challenges and opportunities for design professionals. We also have a little fun as we look back at how this whole journey began and the support system that helps keep the dream alive. But first, a word from our sponsor. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them that you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. And now, our 3-year anniversary podcast takeover episode, hosted by Molly Rose.
Thank you, Rick, so much for having me. I'm so honored that you chose me to interview you for this podcast. It's really exciting. God.
Well, thank you for doing it. I think it's really cool that you were like, you stepped up, you entered the contest, you sent me some great questions in the direct messages. So
yeah.
I think that was really cool. And we had to choose someone, and I feel like I made a great choice. I'm looking forward to speaking with you.
Oh, thanks. Well, we have so many mutual friends, and people have told us that we would get along.
Right.
And so I'm just glad we're here getting to do this.
And for the record, this is literally the first time we've ever met face to face. We have talked on the phone, but.
Right. So this is basically our first date.
Yeah.
Everyone's listening.
Everyone's looking.
Amazing.
Everyone's listening.
Yeah, we are in a fishbowl.
We're in a fishbowl right now at the Middleby showroom behind glass. But let's do this.
Good.
This sounds like fun.
Okay, well, so big first foremost, congratulations. It's your third anniversary.
Thank you so much.
What do you feel most proud of at this point, looking backward?
I think probably the best thing that has come from this whole platform, the podcast and everything that comes along with it, is really just seeing the rise of the design community, which is exactly what I envisioned when I started this whole journey. I've always liked that camaraderie among designers, and I liked that communication, that whole, you know, sharing information and talking about your mistakes to help other design professionals, you know, not make the same mistakes that you did, learning from those mistakes and kind of paying that forward. So I think that this platform has really contributed to that and has really elevated that. And so I'm definitely most proud of that, and I'm looking forward to seeing it continue to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you think that there's a future for Design Biz Survival Guide in different markets across the United States where you're going to be traveling and interviewing people far and wide? And
oh, definitely. I mean, now that we can travel again, now that we can travel about the globe more freely, you know, my goal has always been to take the show on the road, to go to market, and to go to international markets as well, and connect with other designers. I've been lucky enough to attract designers from all over the country, and when travel doesn't permit, we're able to, you know, kind of zoom it in But definitely now that we can get back to traveling again, I see some episodes in Paris in my future.
Ooh la la.
Possibly Spain. So we'll see.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, that's so exciting. So, but let's give a little bit of context to who you are and what you're doing, because sure. Now that the mic is on you, we've turned the tables. What are you doing outside of the podcast? Where are your fingers in what different paint buckets as you're dealing and working in the interior design industry?
Well, so my day job is really primarily consulting. So that is something that I added to the podcast platform probably in the second year. Once I got the podcast dialed in and I felt like it was somewhat on autopilot, then the next step was to introduce the consulting. So I do a lot of consulting for interior design professionals. Strictly business, no creative. My design days are behind me. So I spend a lot of time interacting with different designers. Sometimes I'm in their office, sometimes I'm working remotely, sometimes we're zooming it in. So that's what I spend like most of my time during the day doing. And then during the week I reserve usually one day for podcast interviews and for reaching out to people and setting up appointments and things like that.
Yeah. So in your consulting, what kind of work are you primarily doing? Is it case by case what a designer needs, or is there a certain amount of themes that you take on?
It really depends on what the designer needs. And so every time I'm introduced to a new potential client or designer, we sit down and we have a conversation about what their challenges are in business and what they hope to achieve and what is keeping them from, you know, overcoming maybe whatever challenges they may be faced with. And then together we kind of develop a roadmap, and that's when I determine, yes, I can help you, or no, I can't, because I can't help everybody. I only know what I know.
Right.
But a lot of times I can point them in the right direction and get them on the right path. But right. Obviously the goal is to work together and overcome the obstacles together.
What do you consider as your expertise?
Oh my gosh. I would have to say processes and procedures. I'm a real stickler about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to really just having consistent processes and procedures within your organization, I think it's really important, and I like to really drive that home with designers. A lot of times, the majority of the challenges that they're facing or the deficiencies in their operation stem from a lack of consistent policies and procedures.
Okay.
So they're kind of reinventing what they do over and over, and so it's inconsistent. And it's not predictable, and so it's not always effective and efficient.
Yeah. So you've had kind of a crazy year to be doing this in.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to be too trite, but we have to talk about 2020 and then even where we are now in 2021. What are the main problems in terms of procedures or processes that your designers are having now? What's the little rub that keeps coming up for everybody?
Well, I definitely think that 2020 put design businesses under the microscope for sure, because the number one way to really identify if you've got your processes in your office and your flow all dialed in is to send everyone home out of the office and see if it still comes together and works.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Right.
So a lot of designers, a lot of business owners, you know, kind of had a rude awakening, but it was an opportunity to really invest in fine-tuning those things. And now that everyone's returning back to the office, I feel like all of these design businesses are very well-oiled machines at this point, because
cool.
I know a lot of business owners invested a lot of time during 2020. And I think the timing is perfect because the market is on fire and designers have never been busier.
Right.
So now is probably the most important and valuable time to have everything dialed in on a business level.
Right. Okay. So things have never been busier. So we're noticing, I mean, you and I, we're both in this industry and we're dealing and talking to designers all day, every mm-hmm. day. I've noticed, I'm sure you have too, that the supply and demand in the industry right now are in a total wrestling match. And it seems like I can't figure out who's going to win at the end of this year, but it doesn't look good for the demand side of things. What do you think you would advise an interior designer who's just, you know, all of their projects have impatient clients, or maybe kind clients, but they're just trying to get their projects done? Where do you put procedures and processes there, or just what word of encouragement would you have for that?
I know that's a real pain point for designers right now, and it's very frustrating. It's frustrating for the designers because it's a, you know, we consider it kind of a service failure on our part, and it's frustrating for the client as well. But the one thing I have found that could really help, not necessarily solve that process or that problem, but definitely help it, is that upfront communication. So again, during this time, I feel like a lot of design professionals have realized, ooh, I probably should have had more detailed conversations with my clients during the onboarding process so that they understand that these kind of things can happen. And sometimes we can resolve them and sometimes we can't. And sometimes we're going to be disappointed and we're going to have to agree to disagree. It's part of the process. And a lot of designers don't like talking about that, and I get it. But with what we do as design professionals, these jobs are very long-term, and we develop relationships with our clients. And so knowing that we're going to be in a long-term relationship with these clients, I think it's important to have real honest conversations up front about what's going to go right and what might go wrong and how you deal with that so that it takes the sting off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the processes part. If mm-hmm. we're building that communication into the industry right now and baking it in when times are hard,
yeah.
I can't imagine how exciting and glorious and, you know, the machine's going to be moving so fast and so efficiently for these designers, you know, 2 years down the line, hopefully 1 year down the line, 6 months down the line, let's push that window even closer.
Heck yeah.
When things are going to be just perfect and swimming. It is crazy to look at, like, even for my work, I'm looking at these interior designers and they're like canceling shoots or whatever because
the stuff's
one,
not there.
One thing isn't there. And you're oh, my like heart breaks from, you know, yep. I would hate to be that close to the finish line and you're waiting on, you know, one side table that's stuck on a crate in the middle of the ocean. You're just like, oh my gosh, you know, I feel so bad.
And
for
that
them.
Window is so narrow.
Right.
Because once you turn over that house and if they live in it for 2 months till that table comes, it's not going to be photo ready.
Absolutely. I want to say God bless the people who are memoing out furniture right now for photo shoots.
To get it done.
Yeah, that's been, for me, that's just the most incredible thing. It's so generous. And I think what you're doing with this podcast, I mean, it's incredible to see the community come together and rally. And I'm bringing stuff from my own. I had to furnish a shoot last week. I had to bring my 3 bar stools and, you know, everybody's pitching into everything. So
that's awesome.
It is cool to see how this community is getting stronger. And I really do credit a lot of it to this podcast and to people like yourself who are spearheading what it looks like to partner together, come together. It, you know, when the tide rises, all the boats float. So,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So establishing those relationships and having, you know, those connections, those relationships with your vendors is so important during times like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I picture you and I think of you as the boots on the ground design reporter in a lot of ways, because you're interacting with all of these interior designers. You have access to a wide bisection of the design world. I mean, here we are in a appliance showroom, but you also get to go into those boutique interior design offices. What have you noticed changed the most? I mean, we talked about supply and demand, but we talked about processes and procedures, but what's really changed the most in the industry after the whirlwind of 2020?
You know, I think that just I think that everyone's taking the business of design a little more seriously. We really saw firsthand in 2020 how valuable real design is and how it impacts people's lives. And so I feel like everyone's taking the business of design a little more seriously, the business owners, the employees, and the consumers. Mm. I think that a big shift has really happened, and I think that it's going to take this industry to new places for sure.
That's really interesting. That makes me think about how people, there's a lot less room for error. So, you know, there's more, I've noticed there's more job listings for CAD drawers.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the word I'm looking for. CAD professionals. And
correct. That's better.
CAD professionals. You know, I'm seeing all of these listings on my Instagram or, you know, on Facebook or wherever it is that I'm interacting with these designers. And it's really incredible how people are really investing in that, you know, just that professionalism, because you can't make any mistakes.
There's a huge demand right now for design professionals, for sure. It seems like everyone's hiring, everyone's expanding their team. And I think it goes back to the fact that business owners are really taking their business a lot more seriously. They value their clients way more than ever before. And their goal is to really provide the very best experience and service to their clients. And in order to do that, you need a really incredible team. So there's lots of opportunity out there for strong, talented designers.
I think you should start a job fair. Like an old-fashioned interior design job
I'll
fair.
I'll leave the recruiting to I have people for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have resources for that.
So of these changes, what do you think? Of all of the changes, what's going to go the way of the buffalo? What's not going to stick around?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think one of the biggest struggles right now in the design community is their pricing structure when it comes to the resale of goods and, you know, the challenge that designers are facing with markup and accessibility to goods, to clients on the internet and things like that. So it's a real big struggle. And I entered the design industry kind of in old school mode. When I entered the interior design industry, it was a basic, you know, cost plus situation. That's how designers made money, plus the design fee. And then over time, I saw that kind of, it changed. It began to change and develop into something new. The business of design is a two-sided business. So it's a design fee and it's a markup. Like, that's how we make our money. And a lot of businesses actually have a very similar structure, a pricing structure. But for some reason, interior designers continue to get grief from consumers about that, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And so right now, it's a bit of an arm wrestle. Either we convince consumers to just deal with the markup because that's our business model, or we find a new way of being profitable. Because you can't just do away with the markup and keep going and be profitable. You have to replace that with something else. And so I feel like... reluctantly, the cost plus model is going the way of the buffalo.
Okay.
Unless some serious like cohesion occurs within the industry, it would take a really big movement.
Have you seen anybody come up with a revenue model or a profit model that looks interesting to you that you want to kind of sink your teeth into a little bit and test? And
yeah, you know, there are some designers that have adopted just kind of a... kind of a flat fee budget for furnishings, kind of like what we do for design. So there's a lot of designers that will just kind of, they will eyeball a project and then throw some hours at it based on previous experience and say, this is an average of what it's going to cost, associate a number to that, and that's their flat fee for design. Some designers have invested and have used their experience over the years to look back on previous projects and understand the costs associated with furnishing these homes and come to a number or an average that it would typically cost to furnish a home at that level to create a flat fee as well for furnishings. It's not necessarily a not to exceed fee because, you know, the sky's the limit when it comes to furnishings.
Absolutely.
But I have seen some designers kind of take that approach, and I would like to see more designers apply their experience to develop numbers that are kind of reliable, so that you can throw that number at the client, they can agree to it, and no one has to have the conversation about markup and all of that stuff. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like, if it's the uncomfortable conversations that are throwing people off, then let's find a way to get around them, but still be profitable.
Yeah.
You know, this is a serious business.
Right. And the best way to serve your customers is to solve their problems.
For sure.
If one of their problems is that they just can't wrap their head around this pricing model, maybe that's the nicest thing you can do for them. And maybe there's a way you can end up making a lot more money, too, if you just simplify it. So that could be really interesting.
Totally. And you know what? That comes down to trust. And going back to our previous, you know, what we talked about earlier about these conversations at the beginning of the process, it really comes down to trust. You have to really trust me for me to throw a number at you and for you to agree to it.
Yeah.
You have to know that down the line, if you have a question, you can comfortably ask me that question, that I'm going to provide you any documentation or backup you need to ease your mind.
Right.
You know what I mean? That has to be established up front to really embrace that.
Right.
So everything boils back down to communication.
In this model, though, it would require that you have a lot of experience. Let's say you get hired by a young designer to consult. Is that something that you would do, is help them figure out what these numbers look like?
Well, totally. That's what this community is all about.
Great.
And so that's why I'm so, you know, rah, rah, rah about this community. Because, yes, as a new designer, it's difficult to establish those numbers because you have no point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
In your first year of business, you don't have a point of reference. But other designers do. And what's the harm in sharing that information?
You know. I hope that everyone agrees with that. I think that we're seeing that come true.
I think that's the direction that the design community is going.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, so I always think back about my own career. You know, I never thought that I was going to be in interior design photography, and especially when I think back to being a kid. What was your childhood like? Did you know you were going to end up here?
Oh my gosh, it's like therapy.
Oh my gosh, let's do it. What's your inner child need?
Yeah, seriously. When I was younger, I didn't even know that interior design was a profession or a career. I come from a very simple background. And so, but I always kind of had this creative kind of thing going on. My brother got the brains and I kind of got the creative talent. And
hey, so that takes brains.
Well, you know what I mean.
I'm here to defend all of us creatives. We've got brains.
He got an A in calculus, and I never even made it to calculus.
Okay? Oh, my goodness.
But, high school was fun for me. It was a very social experiment for me, and I had a great time, and I got pretty good grades. But I really focused on, this kind of community thing actually stems all the way back to high school, if I really think about it. And the leadership associated with what I'm doing now really stems back to high school. I was big in student council all 4 years, and so we would go to like student council camp every summer at UC Santa Barbara, and that's really where I kind of learned to, A, build trustful relationships, B, I learned what community was all about and the benefits associated with that, and so after high school, I knew that that was something I wanted to continue to incorporate into whatever I did for a living. I just didn't know what it was going to be.
Yeah.
And then, after high school, I moved to Orange County. And I think that's kind of when a light bulb turned on, when you buy your first house and you do a few things to it and you're like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. This is kind of what I've always wanted to do. And then you get that mailer from the design school and it's like, all right, I'm going to design school.
Yeah, totally.
So that's kind of the path that I took. It's funny, I tell people that I was stuck in the 13th grade for a long time. I mean, I went to community college, but I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do. So I was just kind of like doing my general education, taking some photography classes. Oh. And so that was kind of fun.
Maybe you could teach me a thing or two. I've never taken a photography. Well, I took one in high school. It doesn't count.
I've got darkroom skills, I know that no one does that anymore, but yeah, I've got some darkroom skills, but... so then I just kind of, I had an opportunity. There was kind of a gap in my life where I was able to not work and pursue a formal education in design. So I did. And that's kind of where it all started. I always wanted to run my own business. I surround myself with entrepreneurs and people who are business owners. So I've always been inspired by them. And some of that had rubbed off on me. So I knew I wanted to have my own design business. And that's what I did immediately after design school.
What was the most important lesson you learned in design school?
In design school specifically, it's funny, I just did a lecture this morning at IDI before this.
Okay.
I think I told the students today, I'm like, take advantage of the people that are around you in design school, because after design school, I actually saw some really cool businesses grow. And I saw people from design school kind of partner together to start their businesses. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And I regret not networking as much as I could have in design school. I love where I'm at now, but I can only imagine where I could be if I spent more time, kind of networking and getting to know my fellow students. And I can only imagine the type of collaborations that could have come from it. So I always encourage designers, you're there for design, but you're also there to begin to establish relevance in this industry. And it really starts in the classroom. There's so many things that you don't learn in the classroom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it looks like you didn't miss a beat. You've started to create those connections now but you've been creating those connections since you were in school. So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That first recession in 2008, when I started my business, which was a horrible time to start a business.
Crazy.
Boy, it was such a learning experience. And that's, I think, when I really started making connections, valuable connections, and seeing how they would benefit my business, because, we were all still connecting. I was connecting with fellow designers and different brands and lines and showrooms and things like that, even though I wasn't crazy busy. But when the market recovered and things got busy again, those relationships were already established and I was ready to hit the ground running. And that's what I try to encourage a lot of people to do while they're in design school. You don't want to sign like that first amazing client and be like, gosh, I've never even been in a showroom before.
Right, exactly. Who's your number one designer that you look to that you're just like, I love their work. Like, I want to see more of it every day.
Yeah, that is so hard to say, because especially now with Instagram and stuff, you're constantly... you're overwhelmed with imagery and inspiration. And, my taste is kind of all over the board. I always worked in the high-end luxury market, so I love like a beautiful, beautiful traditional home. It's just a very well put together traditional home. But at the same time, you know, I love contemporary, and I'm kind of also personally, I'm more of a hippie, an elevated hippie, maybe,
yeah.
We could say. And so, you know, people like Max Humphrey, who really kind of have this cool Oregon vibe. So my taste is
frontier.
All over the place. I know, yeah. It's crazy. It's
so
crazy.
You're kind of between the pages of like Veranda and Well.
I know. Oh, I know.
Gosh.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's what's so much fun about what I do, because especially now, because I get to interact with so many different designers. And before, I mean, I loved working in my office and I loved my team. I can't wait to see them tonight, actually. But now it's like working in all of these different offices, and you go from like luxury traditional to like cabin chic to coastal modern to like high-end contemporary. It's so fun to be exposed to all of that.
That's how I feel about my work too.
Oh, as a photographer, you can totally relate to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was like my number one goal. Like when I left my design firm, I was like, okay, I've got to develop something that will keep me in this industry and keep me inspired and visually stimulated, because those are the things that I really liked about design, in addition to the business part.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not a total hater when it comes to design. I'm not completely ruined.
So tomorrow you get unlimited amount of money. You have to redo your living room. What's the first thing you get rid of? What's the first thing you buy?
Oh, my gosh. What's the first thing I get rid of? What do I have in my living room that I'm not really crazy about? I have really crappy lighting in my living room. I've always skimped on lighting in my home, actually. So I would ditch the lighting. I'd get legit lighting for my art, because I love my art and my display cabinet. So I'd probably get like some really, I would invest in amazing lighting for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not something I would expect anyone to say. I love that answer.
I know it sounds weird, but I surround myself with things. So I have hundreds and hundreds of books on these bookshelves that I love, and I just love staring at them. And I have some really cool pieces of art that I've collected from artists that I admire and friends who are very talented artists. And so those are the things that I want to look at and I want to highlight. And right now I just have this crappy fixture in the ceiling. I know it sounds horrible.
No, that's such a cool answer. I mean, and it also speaks to like your very cool life well lived. What would your husband's picks be? What would he get rid of first and what would he buy first?
What would he get rid of first? Oh my gosh. I know what he'd buy first. He'd probably buy like a hammock or something like that. And then what would he get rid of? He'd probably just ditch the kitchen completely. He is a like top chef. He loves to cook. And so, I mean, if it was up to him, he would just kind of just completely redo that kitchen and make it totally, you know, chef kitchen situation.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What does he do for
and
work?
I would be fine with that because he's a great cook.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, go with God. Choose, go do what you want.
He is not in the industry, so he's not in the creative industry at all. My family business is water treatment and purification. So he's more of the brainiac side. So there are a bunch of chemical engineers that work hard day and night to make drinking water safe.
That's my first job. This is just funny. Before I was doing interiors and I was still making money to just get this whole thing off the ground,
right.
I photographed water treatment plants and sewage plants.
Oh my gosh.
And it was really exciting.
Somebody's got to do it.
It was lovely. Yeah, somebody had to do it. And you know, I had a really fun time at that job. It was just strange, but traveled all over California photographing sewage plants.
Funny.
Yeah.
How funny. Yeah, I don't know if it would work if we were both creative people. I know that there's a lot of great examples of designers, husband and wife teams or partner teams who are both creatives and it works really well, but I'm a big fan of kind of like opposites attract. So we've been together almost 30 years.
You guys aren't Chip and Joanna.
We're no Chip and Joanna for sure, but he does have a list of honeydews a mile long and he's very capable, but yeah, we've been together for a good long time, and I think our opposites attract rule really works out well for us.
I know you're a pet person. Tell me about your pets.
Oh,
you have a dog?
Life without a dog, I can't even imagine. And so I like to say that our house is really the dog house and we're just guests there.
Oh my gosh.
And so I have an 8-year-old Portuguese water dog. Her name is Lucy.
Oh.
And she's such a doll. And she goes to work with my partner every day. And I get her on nights and weekends.
Oh my gosh.
She really just kind of like
shared
rules
custody.
The house. And basically, it's what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoy having her around. So total dog person.
Okay. And then next question.
Yeah.
And maybe final question.
Sure.
After a year of just being kind of stuck, what's the first country you want to go to
Oh my gosh. I'm definitely going to Paris in January. It's been decided. So I was supposed to go to Maison in Paris in 2019, and we chose to go to Spain instead and a couple of other trips. And I was always like, oh, there's always next year. And then 2020 happened.
Yeah.
And so I won't be doing that again. I will be seizing the moment. And so I'm looking forward to going to Paris. I've never been, so I'm excited about that. Amazing. And then there's a few other places lined up as well, but that's going to be our first big trip. And it won't be till 2022. I'm not ready to travel quite yet.
Yeah.
But between now and then, there's lots of trips to Napa, lots of trips to Oregon, which is my happy place, road trips and things like that. So
for Oregon wine, or do you just like Oregon in general?
Napa for wine, and just kind of Oregon for just to hug a tree. Sometimes you just got to hug a tree. You know what I mean?
Escape a little. Yeah.
We have some very dear friends who have a home there, and so we go there and kind of hang out and escape for a few days, and then you just come back recharged and ready to conquer.
So good. Everybody needs that.
Oh, it's so important. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that you really, the self-care thing is a big deal to me, and you really
need
to take care of yourself.
Right.
I can't be the very best that I can be for my clients unless I am in a good place, and so I've definitely, there has been a shift in my world and my life. And I really make time for myself, because that's the only way I can be of service to others.
That's so cool. Yeah. And such a good lesson and good piece of advice for everybody, especially we're just in this phase of working so hard. So we're all going to take that one to heart.
Everyone, take the time.
I
take the time for yourself.
I need to. I think yesterday when we spoke, I was sitting by a hotel pool. I was like, I'm at a pool right now.
See what I mean? Sometimes you just got to do it.
On a Monday morning.
Sometimes you just got to do it.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for having me to interview you.
Oh, for sure.
It's fun to turn the tables and get to know you more. Again, this is our first time meeting.
Yeah.
Which is so funny.
Well, this was fun. I got to talk about things that I don't normally talk about. I mean, I always talk about the business of design, but it's kind of fun to do some of the talking and answer some questions. And hopefully, you know, we will inspire the listeners and they've learned something new, either that will help their business or something new about me that, I don't know, might give them a chuckle.
Yeah. And I think it's good too to really reiterate that you are such a resource and people can come knocking on your door with desperate questions, and
absolutely.
That if you're the person that's going to guide them, you're going to be there for them.
Absolutely. I mean, anybody that's out there knows, anybody that knows me and anyone that has been in contact with me knows, you know, if you pick up the phone or if you send a direct message to me or just fire off an email to me, you know, we're going to have a conversation.
Okay.
And, you know, who knows where it's going to go, but I'm going to return that call. And we're going to have a conversation because that's my career now. I'm making a living of it. So.
Yeah. Well, and you're very kind and generous to do so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
This has been fun. Thank you for doing that. I can't wait to share it with everyone.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this special podcast takeover episode. I truly want to thank each and every one of you who listens, supports, and shares Design Biz Survival Guide with your design tribe. Speaking of design tribe, will you be joining us in Palm Springs this fall for Design Biz Retreat? This exclusive gathering of design visionaries and industry experts combines the business of design and the value of community to deliver a two-day experience you don't want to miss. Visit our website for all the details and bios on our featured speakers, including Michelle Lin, Kelly Lamb, Christopher Kennedy, Michael Walters, Amy Monroe, and Kate the Socialite. This opportunity is limited to 24 design professionals and only a few seats remain. So register now and be a part of the design community's most anticipated business and personal development event of the year. Thanks for joining us for this week's discussion about life and the business of design. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.